From the Len de Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the second day of June 2023. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlow. He's a GlobalCommResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. And Eric Snodgrass from NutrienAg Solutions and Agrible will take us through the ever-important weather forecast. Oh, and if you can stay with us for the whole hour, you'll hear all of Commodity Week with our panelists, Garrett Toy, Chip Nellinger, and Sherman Newland. Otherwise, you can hear it online right now at willag.org or on many of these radio stations over the weekend. July corn for the day settled at 6.09. It was up 16 and a half cents. The range there, 6.10 and a half to 5.81 and a quarter. December, 5.41 and a quarter, up 11 and a quarter. Ranged from 5.41 and three quarters to 5.23 and a half. And July beans today, big range. 13.52 and a half, the settlement price, 23 higher. The high at 13.55 and a quarter. The low at 13.22. And November beans, 11.83 and three quarters for the settlement price, up 14 and three quarters. The range there at 11.86 and a half on the top side to 11.63 and a half on the bottom. Bean meal futures were down 3.60 for the day. The bean oil, $1.64 higher, and soft red winter wheat was 8.25 higher at $6.19 in the July. The hard red July up 9.75 at $8.12 and a quarter. Live cattle futures finished at $172.90, 52 and a half cents higher. Feeders up 25 at $241.90, and lean hogs $84.65 per 100 pounds, up $2.60. Crude oil at $71.77 a barrel, $1.67 higher, and the wholesale price of gasoline up 7 cents at $2.56 today. Mike Zuzlow, GlobalCommResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas, is here now. Mike, thanks for being with us. I'd say it's been a weird week, but just today was kind of unique and different. Boy, the markets really rallied from out of the dregs earlier in the session. What happened?
It's funny what a drier GFS noontime model can do for you, Todd, in the early part of summer when in Illinois and a lot of Indiana and parts of Iowa and eastern Missouri are still really, really dry. And, you know, talking about clients that have told me they've had a three quarters to an inch of rain all of the month of May, I think that was what did it. That's what told us that we were going to go back up towards the weekly chart on the corn. We've got that gap above the market we started to fill. And we went back to it, made new weekly highs with the July, one of the leaders to the downside, thanks to the earlier export sales numbers, which were a marketing year low in wheat, a negative number. Corn, very negative as well as far as size, with more unknown destinations reductions. So it seemed like this week, whether it was Wednesday and Thursday and the Chinese economic data that threw us all over the place and kind of beat us up like a rag doll, or Friday, where we had a sharply lower price action and everything but beans until the midday weather came out. We just continue to magnify this negative demand bias, and then we price it in, and then we look at the weather models. And unfortunately, I don't see much changes in this market in terms of how they're going to act going forward, because we did bring in beans from Brazil again. We did bring in hard red wheat from Poland and or Germany again. And so when prices rally, I think it's going to be tough for the bear when the weather gets dry. But then when prices rally, it's going to be tough for the bull to hold on to those rallies, because the trade's going to assume either terrible export sales and demand and or more imports coming in. And I wouldn't discount the idea of corn imports coming in if Brazil's second crop corn is as big as some of the private forecasts this week, which I'm not there yet, but there's plenty of people thinking it's growing, not shrinking.
So the weather folks are all still pointing to that June 8, 9, 10, 11 area for a pattern shift, and saying if it doesn't come, then things really get worrisome. So I have a question related to that, which is, we've seen a lot of volatility with many fundamentals on the marketplace saying bearish. On the flip side, the weather saying, don't know, we may not have a crop. So that pushes things to the bull. If we get to that next week and the market says we're still in a weather market, does the volatility remain? or remain on both sides of this marketplace because of the fundamentals or not. And on the flip side, if we have an El Nino summer, do we lose it all together and just move downward?
The El Nino summer is a tougher one for me because I just don't buy into it that much. None of my yield models factor in La Nina or El Nino here in this country. I would say the exact opposite for the Southern Hemisphere, especially Southeast Asia, like Australia and obviously Brazil and Argentina. But to your prior point, you bring up a huge point. The at-the-money options have seen a massive increase in volatility here over the last month, month and a half. And I don't see that ending, Todd, because I think what we're going to continue to see, unless the dollar changes trend, and the dollar is heavily influenced by the Chinese economy. That's the thing that I think we can put the stake in the ground to this week and say, okay, it's pretty clear the Chinese economy pulled these commodities down. No matter pretty much anything you looked at, it was hard to rally, if not make new lows. And so until the Chinese economy bottoms, and until that happens, I don't think the dollar will stop being a safe haven and be the bid in the market. Part of the reason why beans were able to rally, in my opinion, Friday so much better than the corn was because they'd beat the beans down. Plus, the Brazilian currency was up 1.2%. Even with the dollar index stronger, it was still about the emerging markets and those crucial emerging markets that compete with us in ag. So I think the volatility is here to stay until we get to September, October. And all in the midst of that is that lower national yield competing with the lower export and eventually livestock demand that we're going to be facing here by the second half of the marketing year.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
That's Mike Zuzulow. He's with GlobalCommResearch.com. So I know you've been out watching your corn closely, and in some areas it looks really good. Other areas you're still really concerned about the dry weather, but you also should be thinking about insect pest of this particular crop, says Nick Sider. He's an Illinois Extension field crops entomologist. I spoke with Nick earlier and asked him about some of the insect pests that you'll find there. He's pretty concerned as it's related to the black cutworm. You might remember that this insect pest flies up from the south and then lands in the fields. And now is the time that those moths have laid eggs and they've hatched and they're really beginning to come out of the ground and can do some damage in the field, says Sider.
So earlier in the spring, you might remember we had some fairly strong storms from out of the southwest. And those actually brought a lot of black cutworm moths into the Midwestern U.S. They're a migratory species. And now, as we enter the beginning of June, end of May, the offspring of those moths have become large enough to where they can start doing that cutting damage, which we see as a problem in corn in particular, but sometimes in soybean and other crops as well.
And so which fields should you watch? Well, Nick Sider has some thoughts about that as well.
So it's not just any field where you're going to have black cutworm problems. Even if you have a very large moth flight, what those moths are drawn to for their overwintering, it isn't necessarily a clean corn or soybean field. Where they really like to lay their eggs is in annual weeds and broadleaf annual weeds in particular. And so where you're more likely to see a large infestation of these is where you kind of struggled to control winter annual weeds earlier in the spring.
And finally, Sider says an insecticide can be used if rescue treatments are needed. He outlines the reasons why and some of the things that need to be done to make sure those rescue treatments work.
So you're looking for plants that have been sort of cut off at the base. It's kind of a jagged cut, but it almost resembles as if they've been cut off by a pair of scissors. This is going to be different from deer damage in that the plant is still going to be there. It'll often be buried in the soil partially nearby. It's going to be different from bird damage in that the plant isn't going to be uprooted. So with birds, they'll actually uproot the plants and you'll see the roots there. And so if you have a decent amount of black cutworm damage, say you have around 3% of your plants cut off by that, You can control them with a pyrethroid insecticide. You do want to get a good high water volume to get that down into the soil. So there are rescue treatments available for this insect if you've hit that economic threshold. Just keep in mind, even if you had a very large moth flight, if you didn't have those winter annual weeds out in the field, that field wasn't very attractive as an oviposition site. They don't really like to lay their eggs usually in a nice, clean cornfield. So it's certainly not going to be every field that's affected by this.
That's Nick Sider from University of Illinois Extension. He's a field crops entomologist. Let's check the weather forecast now. Eric Snodgrass is here from Nutrien Ag Solutions in Agrible. Thank you, Eric, for the nice little rainfall we got in that last 72 hours. I think I got, you know, maybe 6-7 tenths. Actually, I don't have a gauge, but that was kind of eyeballing it. At least that's what I thought I had. I maybe got more like an inch and 2 tenths based on what's standing in the cul-de-sac. I know everybody else is thinking, hey, but why didn't I get any? And there sure were a lot of places that did not get rainfall. Let's start with baselines. What did May as a month look like across the Corn Belt, and how dry was it?
Well, next year at this time, that's all we'll be talking about. Like, oh, do you remember how dry May was? And then we'll have the rest of that story, though, as we cook through the rest of June and July and August to know how the crop's going to do. But yeah, there's a lot of folks in here that have not measured rain in about 25 days. But you're right. Locally, in the last 2 days, there are places that have received anywhere from a couple of hundredths of an inch to well over 3 inches of rain in highly localized spots. And the reason for that is, just like we talked about last week, there is no flow in the upper levels of the atmosphere. In fact, I don't know if you saw this, it was a great tweet by the National Weather Service out of Lincoln, but they tweeted that the weather balloon they launched earlier this week, which normally when they launch it, they can climb 50, 60, 70,000 feet in the sky. They get blown by the westerlies and pop somewhere over Indiana or even as far east as Ohio. Well, their balloon that they launched earlier this week, because of how stagnant the flow is aloft, didn't make it out of the county. It actually popped 7 miles away, and that is extremely rare. So that just shows you what's happening. So the storms go up, they collapse on themselves, and in the middle, they rain out pretty heavily in certain spots. But if you don't get it, there is just no moisture to be had out of that. So yeah, this May, the only thing we avoided was long duration heat. So outside of that, we got through May, even though we were dry, without too much damage on the crop.
You know, one of my favorite childhood memories is that we found one of the balloons that had been sent up by the National Weather Service.
Oh, yeah?
It was so cool.
Did you disc it up?
No, it just had a little white box on the bottom of it, great big red balloon, and said, mail it here. So I assume my parents mailed it off. I have no idea.
Most people keep them as souvenirs. But did you know when we first started doing that? Now, this is a thing we started doing like really around World War II. But they used to not put any instructions on it. And you would not believe the number of times people found those and thought of like UFOs or aliens or some secret government thing. And so we had to put a letter in it and write on the thing. This is just a weather instrument. Send it back. We can reuse it.
Oh, but we digress. Let's come back to the weather. It was too much fun. Next 10 days. Looks like it's going to be hot.
Yeah, and unfortunately dry. So we've got a problem right now that the pattern is setting up where the ridge is just going to sit over Minnesota. We're too close to it. The heat's all throughout the Midwest and Great Lakes Basin. Temperatures are going to possibly get into the low to mid 90s. If I were saying this and it was June or July the 1st, we'd have a much different conversation. But put a little bit of heat on the crop now. We still have some moisture in the soil that's left. In fact, I did a quick soil sample yesterday over in Champaign on a field that hadn't measured rain in 24 days. And only the top 2 inches were powder. Everything else I could still flatten like a pancake and keep its consistency. So, you know, as we go forward, we're going to have to endure that. But I've got kind of a key set of dates in mind. That'd be June 10th to June 12th as a bit of a pattern shift, cooler weather and better chances for rain. And we need it. If that doesn't happen, though, we will be having a much different conversation in the middle and end of June.
All right. Let's talk about May and June together. How much does it matter if it's dry?
Well, you look historically, and remember, I've never planted a single row of corn or soybeans, but I can look at the data, And you look historically and you will not find a strong correlation just yet with precipitation and moisture as being a major problem to really destroy yields if we don't have it. In fact, we look back at all those years where we transitioned into El Nino at this time of year. They were actually, when you put them all together, they were drier than normal as well. So we sit here and we're waiting, and I don't know about you, but I'm getting quite impatient waiting for June 10th to the 12th to get here to see if the rain is going to manifest itself the way we forecast. But statistically speaking, that's all this is. This is not yet the time where we have to worry. It's after this, if the moisture doesn't return, we have to start being concerned.
Given you told us about June 10th last week on May the 25th, I'm starting to get impatient myself. What do you see after June 10th? What does the summer look like?
Well, we still have an El Nino. And that, don't listen to it says it's transitioning. It's here. The ocean temperatures are 0.6 C above normal. That is fully into El Nino criteria. We have westerly wind bursts in the trade winds. That's El Nino. And we have a subtropical jet. That's also an El Nino characteristic. So we've got all these pieces in place for El Nino to arrive. The reason why it's not had its effect right now is actually because of the Atlantic. We have the Bermuda high that should be over Bermuda, spinning around, pumping moisture from the Gulf of Mexico right into the midsection of the country. The Bermuda high is closer to Spain and Africa than it is to the United States. That's the missing component. In fact, you want good evidence of that. We just saw Tropical Depression 2 form yesterday. That's down in the Gulf of Mexico. It's not going north like tropical systems do. It's actually forecast to go south to Cuba, and that only happens if the steering winds are not in their normal configuration. So rest of summer, El Nino has got to take a grip on this pattern, and if it does, we'll be having much more pleasant conversations going forward. If it takes longer and longer to do that and the Bermuda high doesn't return, then what we're going to have to start talking about is what are we going to be chopping off in terms of the high-end potential of this yield and where's the problematic areas?
On patterns, I have one other question for you. This is based on the rainfall over the 72-hour period, not counting today. But it appears, it's just a weird pattern that to the west of Interstate 35 or Des Moines West and to the east of Interstate 57, here to the east, they got rainfall, but there's this huge chunk in a rectangle in the middle that just didn't get. Why is that the case?
Yeah, there was nothing to trigger the atmosphere to rise over there other than heat. So we had a little front, a weak, very weak boundary, surface convergence that kind of rode between 55 and 57, even over into Indiana, that popped those storms earlier this week. And then they've had much, much better forcing out in the plains where they've had large thunderstorm complexes. In fact, have you seen the videos of all of the flooding down in Texas? The panhandle of Texas, which has been in 18 months of almost solid drought at the highest level, some places there in the last 7 days got 10 inches of rain. And there's nowhere for that water to soak in because the soil's still as hard as a rock. So it's, this atmosphere is being very unforgiving, and it's not sharing very well.
Hey, thanks much. We'll talk with you again soon.
That sounds good. Thanks.
Eric Snodgrass is with Nutrien Ag Solutions, and Agrible joined us here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.